Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Mullet Cast, the podcast where business and pleasure collide. My name is Evan Balmer.
What's up? It's Mike Mercia.
What's happening, Mike?
What's going on?
Today we are joined by Vincent Pungello. Vincent is the owner of Pungello CPA. Follow him on Facebook at Pungello CPA. Also his website, PungelloCPA.com. That's PungelloCPA.
That is correct.
What's going on, Vinny?
What's up?
Not much. Keeping busy. Tax season is continuing.
Sweet.
Yeah, which is a beautiful thing. It's pretty much an all-year-round business, which is great now, but definitely been growing and expanding more into the small business space. So it's been an exciting 2018, 2019. Looking forward to continuation into 2020.
Well, that's cool.
Awesome.
That's I was always confused by that. It's like you live in different years, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's 2019, but you're talking to everyone about what they did in 2018.
Right.
Probably some people about years well before that as well.
It does get a little exciting when you start going back to 2017, 2016, 2015, and you start realizing people do need a better education on what taxes are, what it means to them, and basically getting past sometimes the nightmare of what it means to be compliant.
Yeah.
Which is the reason early this morning I was on conversations with getting someone current that went back about 15 years. So
yeah.
That's always a lot of fun, right?
Absolutely.
It's funny. It's like we were talking before. I was at a comedy show this weekend. One of the comedians opening up, she was talking about like growing up and getting herself organized. And she's like, you know, I just filed my taxes. And, you know, there's like this long pause. And then she's like, for 2011. Yeah, so it is funny.
It is, and it's some interesting challenges for people. You know, part of the enjoyment of the job too is when you solve problems for people, and all of a sudden they sleep better at night, or you know they feel like, okay, I'm not, you know, going to go to jail, which is really not what the IRS is about. The IRS really is about, you know, tax compliance, and if, you know, you owe them, pay them. If they owe you, they'll pay you, and that's really it. They've become a very different organization in the last couple of years, which is positive.
Yeah. That's one thing that amazed me. I mean, you and I talked a little bit about, I had like a brief stint in accounting, working more on like entertainment side, so I was doing like a lot of tour work and things like that, but I quickly realized like IRS really, they're not out to get you, and really what they are is they're, you know, customer service people. Yeah. Right, you can call them and ask them like calling and talking to the IRS doesn't mean like, oh my god, I've admitted I have, you know.
Right.
They're to talk you through and help you get compliant, like you said.
Right, and there are different organizations within the IRS.
Right.
Like, you know, I work with the tax practitioner group. You have the general numbers, and you also have the taxpayer advocate. So, you know, part of people understanding their relationship with the IRS is, look, worst comes to worst, just file.
Yeah.
You know, make yourself compliant, and then you can negotiate with them. If you owe them, they owe you.
Right.
But don't not file. That's really what it comes down to. And if you're scared about doing something, contact a CPA.
Yeah.
You know, you got to find one that's going to mesh personality-wise, experience-wise, skills-wise, for what you need. But you know, obviously being involved in networking groups or just, you know, reaching out, you can find someone that can help you out, but don't not do it.
Right.
So something you always preach is at this time of year, we're the halfway through the year, it's June, for business owners to check in.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that important to do a mid-year check-in?
Right. So, you know, what people, and I'm an ambassador for my profession as well, I do believe that CPAs, and not all of them, everyone has their own, you know, unique special set of skills or practice, but if you're working with your accountant, you either have a tax preparer or you have an accountant. You can have both, but you can sometimes only have a tax preparer. So a lot of times the clients that I deal with, person prepares their taxes, they give them their paperwork once a year, they process it, and they end up with, you know, either a refund or they owe. That's not taking advantage of the skill set of people that you're working with. You know, you have a network of individuals, whether it's me or another accounting firm, reach out to them. Ask them the questions of, listen, this is where my business is. What do I need to do? And you'll find out very quickly if that CPA is someone you want to work with. I mean, you know, part of what Pungello CPA focuses on is helping you grow your top line.
Yeah.
You know, when I see someone's QuickBooks, I immediately will say, okay, if you just see the sales line item, that's not, no business has sales. They have very specific things you can sell. If it's, you know, website development, you have multiple services. If you're a legal practice, you have different things and services you offer. An accounting practice, it's the same way. So when you look at someone's business, you know, my questions, and then sometimes they're hard questions of, here's your five products you're offering. What are your targets for those things? How are we doing at this stage right now? How's your expense management? And expenses are kind of easy, kind of low-hanging fruit to manage because it's something you've already spent. when you're doing your own planning, you want to look at something and say, okay, I anticipate a 10% growth in that. Okay, how are we tracking? Mm. I'm down 3%. All right, what are you doing to do that? So the resistance I get from clients sometimes is it's basically sitting down with the principal and explaining why you did or didn't do what you did. But it is critical to the growth of any business. And whether it's a service business, a product business, it doesn't matter. You really need to take the self-evaluation of where you are and how you're looking to achieve it. Do you have the resources? What are your tax consequences of that? How is your cash flow? That's the fun of my profession, is helping businesses grow. The numbers are the numbers. Look, computers do the taxes. The bookkeepers I have do bookkeeping. My business structure is three components. It's taxes, business advisory, and accounting. I have bookkeepers do the QuickBooks. I have tax preparers prepare taxes. I get involved in all aspects. But the value add for Pangelo CPA is on the business advisory side.
Yeah, right. So let's talk about how you got into accounting. You're a graduate of Manhattan College.
Yes, I am.
You have BS in accounting.
Yep. Which stands for Bachelor of Science.
That's right.
BS.
So what was your interest initially in accounting? Like, how'd you end up accounting major?
When I was in high school, I was thinking about going to business. My uncle, who I kind of credit to get me started, and that was the controller for Swingline Staplers and National Shoes, and gave me some just kind of uncle advice saying, look, go into accounting. You'll at least have a fundamental understanding of business.
Right.
And if you get your CPA, whatever happens, you can always hang on a shingle and put food on the table.
Right.
Kind of a very conservative viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I went in high school, took some accounting classes, went into college a little bit advanced, liked it. It was a very different world back then with accounting. Obviously, computers weren't rolled out. It was very manual. But I liked the idea, the concepts, the strategies. Towards my senior year of college, I got involved with the Small Business Administration and started going out with other students and helping small businesses out. So it kind of gave me my first taste of dealing with small entrepreneurs who had real problems.
Right.
They couldn't afford an accountant, so they reached out to the Small Business Administration and they brought out college students.
That's cool.
And it was a great experience, but again, we had the old ledgers, and some of the people listening probably recognize that, the old green paper. You had to write everything down on hand. Excel wasn't really around, so it was very manual.
Right.
Graduated college, and in order to become a CPA, you have to work for another firm. It's kind of like an apprenticeship to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. You can work for one of the larger firms, or you can go into what's called internal auditing. And that's usually basically auditing the books and records of individual firms.
Right.
I went into the internal auditing route. So when I graduated, I started working for banks, brokerage firms, pretty much Wall Street, and doing the internal auditing route in order to become certified. So you have to work with CPAs in your firm. You have to work with the outside accounting firms. It takes a little bit longer, but it was a really fascinating profession. But at the same time, I started taking on bookkeeping clients. I wasn't a CPA yet, so I started just doing some taxes. And this is also the very, very beginning of, the taxes at the time were all on paper.
Right.
So you have to go to the post office. You had to go to the library. You had stacks of forms. Fill everything out by hand. If you made a mistake, couldn't use whiteout, you had to go redo it. It was great when printers came out and you can use dot matrix printers.
What is that? Okay.
He's still wondering what a stapler is. He's like, Swingline. Yeah. Actually, who is National Shoes?
It was a shoe company.
Did you know what brands they rolled out or anything?
I didn't. That was a little before my time.
All right, cool. So I'm thinking, so where was Swingline? Were they like Brooklyn or something?
They were in the city. My uncle was a Bronx guy. They moved up to Rockland County. He was one town over, so he would commute into the city.
Right. That's cool.
But then, again, started picking up more and more clients. I started the practice in 1992.
No, he's serious. He doesn't know what a dot matrix printer is.
Really? Yeah, what is it?
So it's a very large printer, and it used to go around, and it would print dots across, and it would actually form the words. And it would go around going, eh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was about this big, and you had the...
Was it dinosaur pulling it to present?
I had hamsters running on the side, basically.
The funny thing, too, you used to buy, huge box of paper had, the holes on the sides, and it would feed it that way. So, this paper would roll up out of a box, and then you'd tear the perforated things that holded the paper. Yeah, man. Well, you don't know how easy you had it.
Well, yeah, I think I told you this a couple weeks ago. I sent my first fax last month, and I had to ask for help.
As a staff auditor for my first bank job, one of my jobs was standing in front of the fax machine watching the fax come through, because it wasn't legal faxes at the time. It was on the thermal paper.
Right.
So you had to sit there and watch it come through and then cut it with a scissor and then make a copy of it. And a fax page could take 3 or 4 minutes to come through
totally
per page.
Wow. And the thermal paper, that was actually a huge plot twist in The Firm, if you remember that movie. Yep. Like, the thermal paper used to curl up, you know, when it came out.
I've heard the guys in my office all about that.
So, yeah. Like, when the fax came in, it fell to the floor and rolled under. And yeah. That's how Tom Cruise, like, survived, yep. Basically, in The Firm.
we're going a little old school.
Because of thermal paper.
As a matter of fact, I still have a fax machine because the IRS, they're getting away from it starting actually this month, but that's how they would remit transcripts to professionals is fax.
Right.
So my kids look at it going, that's a fax machine, yeah. Why? Well, because yeah. That's how the IRS, because they couldn't secure emails.
Where are they going to now? Is it emails?
Now we have to set up an online account. Yeah. So the IRS will actually deposit it on their server, so to speak, and you can access the information.
Now, not to get off topic, but isn't fax still the safest way to transfer documentation?
So it's most secure way? Is now, yeah. Particularly for wire instructions, so for like a real estate transaction, mm-hmm. Everyone wants wire instructions faxed because there's so much, you know, piracy going on with right. Emails yeah. And stuff. Mm-hmm.
It's really not hackable.
It's a phone line. Yeah, like, yeah, you can't, right. You know.
I mean, you have to worry about the paper being received. That's yeah. The IRS would – in fact, I was just speaking this morning. It's like, hey, we're sending it. You accept the responsibility. Yes, it's in a secure location. Mm. And they would fax it over.
Yeah.
I got some fax documents waiting for me back at the office. I won't call on the drive here. But that was just, you know, the way they're doing it because – and I agree with them. If you can't secure it, yeah. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Now they're getting better and their technology is improving. So it makes it a little bit easier and more transparent for a CPA, especially when you're registered with the IRS. You know,
yeah.
I'm a known quantity. I speak with them almost daily. So you had to develop relationships with them.
Right.
And, you know, you can exchange information, but not on email. They won't do that.
Okay.
Which is smart.
It's smart. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's tough, that part of it. All right. So back to when you're first getting started, how did you segue into your position? Into auditing on Wall Street?
So basically, it was a merger mania time when I was on Wall Street. So a lot of the firms were merging. Matter of fact, my dad would call me up after a merger. He's like, so you're working for that company, right? I'm like, yeah. He goes, you got a black cloud over your head? Every time you work for a firm, they got merged.
Right.
But that was what was going on in Wall Street and banking at the time. So as I continued, you know, throughout, kept getting more advanced in the internal auditing space, learning about it. I kept growing the practice, became a CPA, got a couple other accreditations as well, but always loved having the practice. To me, it was always just scratching that entrepreneurial itch. It was helping people out. It was a long day. I mean, obviously, I was, you know, living in Jersey, commuting to Manhattan. I had a lot of New York-based clients. So in my younger years, it was a little easier to, you know, work all day, then go out late into the evening with clients, and then, you know, leave at 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, come back. As you get a little bit older, it gets a little bit more difficult to do. But, you know, it got more and more, and as I progressed throughout the profession, I got to pretty much the pinnacle of it, which is, you know, the head of internal auditing for an organization, and that was Cantor Fitzgerald.
Right.
Spent like 2.5 years there, but it got to the point where it's like you kind of have to make a decision of what you want to do. I couldn't.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got, from plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Do both anymore.
Right.
It was a 5-hour round trip commute, so it was a little daunting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided, you know what, at this time, point of life, it's time to really scratch the entrepreneurial itch. And sat down with my clients and then really went through it and said, I'd like to kind of do this full time. My client base was very supportive. Matter of fact, I almost doubled the size of the business in year one just through referrals. And then it just kept growing from that point. So, you know, kind of 3.5 years ago, decided it's time to do it. Haven't looked back since. And it's been a great ride. I mean, I appreciated what I did with the internal auditing space, but once you achieve that certain level, you know, it's either go for a larger firm and really make the commitment and stay in that profession, or, you know, if you wanted to do it, you know, mid-40s was the time to do it.
Yeah.
So you were at Cantor Fitzgerald recently?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, because obviously that's a firm that was, you know, horribly affected by September 11th.
Yeah.
You know, but they obviously have...
But they've recovered nicely. I mean, my time at Dean Witter was during that time. My office was on the Tower 2 of 56th floor.
Oh, were you really?
And my sister was on 70th floor because we're also working for Dean Witter. So the second plane kind of went right through my office.
Wow.
Yeah, so and everyone I know got out great. In fact, I had it's kind of a funny side note. Twice in my life, a dirty diaper saved my life, which is kind of a weird thing to say.
Right.
Once when I was a baby, my mom was actually going to go meet a friend. Stopped. We were in the Bronx. Stopped. Went back home because I was being a baby. Did what a baby would do.
Right.
And then brought me back. Changed me. And by the time she got to meet her friend, who was waiting on a corner, a car unfortunately had run the curb and ran them down and killed them.
Wow.
Otherwise, Jesus. We would have been standing in the same spot.
Right.
And then killed. flash forward to 9/11.
Right.
I was leaving to go to work. I went to say goodbye to my son, who was a baby. And, oh boy, do I leave? Do I change the diaper? Do I leave? I'm a typical guy. I'm like, all right, let me change the diaper. And that made me late. And I got stuck in traffic. And as I got onto the PATH train, that's when the plane kind of went through. So I ended up getting evacuated back out to Jersey and witnessing it. Otherwise, I would have been. I was just at my desk 7:30 in the morning reading the Wall Street Journal,
right,
overlooking the Hudson because it was a beautiful office.
Sure.
But that was that one day I happened to get one side note, and my son has not let me forget it ever since then.
So he's basically collecting from
pretty much. Yeah. Right? He's like, he gets in trouble. He's like, yo, Dad, remember the diaper? I'm like,
So my son, I guess, is what you would call self-reporting in accounting parlance. Is Father's Day, he comes up to me, we're at a little cook out at my parents' house. Dad, I got a bomb in my pants.
Really?
Yeah. And of course, being the plan ahead father I am, I had no diapers or anything with me, so you know, I had to do the quick. I guess it got me out of food prep, so diaper saved me that day because I had to go make a diaper run.
Now,
basically,
Bryce is four now, right?
Nah, he's three.
Three?
Yeah.
Dad, I got a bomb.
So I'm ready for him to like. He's resistant to. Kids just, you know what it is, he likes to go against the grain, mm-hmm. and he thinks like doing things that you're not supposed to do is kind of funny. So the whole potty training thing, he's like, his famous line is, I'll go on the potty tomorrow,
right?
Like everything's tomorrow,
really.
You know, it's tomorrow,
he's
or Friday. Yeah, he's a total wise guy. You know, now his sister, on the other hand, she learned with marshmallows. So the famous story with her is, I was at work. My daughter goes to the bathroom on the toilet, looks up at my wife and says, "Now give me an effing marshmallow."
Wow.
So my phone rang immediately.
It's like, honey,
you've
talk.
Got to clean up your language around the house. I gave her an A for proper usage of the word.
Yeah,
it was very impressive.
There's a time and place.
Exactly. Yeah. The context was perfect.
Yeah, it was awesome. So obviously, all right. So you were a dean. What happened to Dean Witter? They were part of.
They became part of Morgan Stanley as well. Okay. Later on, so I stayed with them, and then kind of just the career continued after that.
Right. Gotcha. So you got to the top of what you were doing. Mm-hmm. Was it what you expected in terms of? Is it kind of anticlimactic when you get there?
It's an interesting set of challenges. It's really dealing with extremely smart people.
Right.
I mean, you know, part of my first audit committee meeting was the typical vision of you looking down a row of a very large table of very wealthy and influential individuals, and it's Vinny at the end making a presentation for an hour. So, you know, you kind of step up your game. It was a great joy to be part of the profession. You know, it's an interesting set of challenges nowadays as well. It's a great avenue to become, you know, affluent. Obviously, it's a job that pays very well.
Mm-hmm.
Accountants in this day and age are very much in demand, which is actually a kind of interesting segue into, at my age and the way the practice is growing, you're not getting a lot of young guys and girls coming in because a lot of times it's a 5-year requirement in order to get your CPA through school. A lot of the old timers are leaving because their business model no longer works.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of an interesting parlance to be in because internal auditing profession is a completely different set of skills. It's a great profession when you go into, and I'm actually seeing more the professionals that I work with doing things on the side, again, scratching that entrepreneurial itch. Maybe they always keep it on the side, but you'll have to get to an inflection point where you decide what do you want to do?
Yeah.
Only so many hours in a day.
Mm-hmm.
But the profession itself is going through some fundamental changes. In fact, a couple weeks back, I had lunch with the just-passed president of the NJCPA, and we were talking about, you know, where she sees smaller accounting firms. And she had actually spent a large part of her time as president meeting with small accounting firms across the state of New Jersey. So it was a really interesting inflection point of what's going on.
Mm.
You know, and my business is a virtual model. So my staff are remotely located. We meet periodically, but everything's done through computer. You know, they get their work, they work on it, they report back into me. Everything's online with QuickBooks, the tax software. So we're taking advantage of technology to keep expenses down and also just to give people as much freedom as possible.
Mm-hmm.
What she was finding was the same thing across the state of New Jersey. The model is changing from having the accounting office that all your clients come to going to clients, mm-hmm. and having some small centralized space,
right.
Or even going like a WeWork for a yard, having space there to meet clients as well. But vast majority of clients, from a tax perspective, they mail their stuff. They don't generally want to meet. I actually, as part of working with Pangelo CPA, we either meet monthly or quarterly. To discuss your business. Otherwise, I'm not the right firm for you as well. If you just want it once a year, that's tax preparation. That's not accounting. But the model's going there, and with millennials coming into the profession as well, it is a dynamic change as well, I think, for the positive.
Right.
Because you don't necessarily need to have the office. It's always good to have some space to get people together. But what I was being told from others is, even with a 25-person, 30-person firm, they're looking and exploring that option because they're getting demands from their staff to have more flexibility, whether it's for kids or an ailing relative.
Sure.
And accounting, to be perfectly honest, is not a 9-to-5 profession. You can do bookkeeping and tax preparation anytime, nights, weekends. So there's a lot of flexibility in the profession. The client relationship piece has got to be centralized. That's, you know, the client comes first.
Yeah.
But my client base loves the fact that I go to them. It does create a lot of mileage on the minivan.
Right.
But that's okay. You know, and like I said, today I'm seeing two clients in the afternoon.
Right.
Walking with the financial, but the bookkeeping was done, you know, over the weekend.
Sure.
So it was, you know, bookkeeper did it. I got the financials. I asked my questions. I now have a presentation for the client, and they're happy.
Right.
They don't have to pack everything up, come down, go to my office, sit down, go through everything. Oh no, I forgot something. Everything's right there.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a dynamic shift in this in the profession.
Technology has really changed a lot of industries. Mm-hmm. You know, brick and mortar isn't as necessary.
Right.
You know, you don't need that storefront with the name on it.
Yeah. No. It's funny. It's like it is like everything that's old becomes new again, right? Because you think about it, back in the day, like house calls, you would you would think of as old fashioned, right? But now it's almost like a modern convenience.
Yeah.
Like, right? Who does want to take time out and trek down to go to someone's office? You know,
they really don't.
Email me, call me, send me the file, come stop by.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say about 85% of the tax practice is mail.
Right.
Yeah.
Well. Mail, and then there's email, which is a little worrisome at times. Post office is a little bit better than email secure-wise. And then, of course, there's the texting or the WhatsApp. So, you know, a lot of times stuff flies through during tax season. I got to make sure I'm checking everything. People say, oh, I forgot a document. Let me just text it to Vinny at 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
All my clients are special, but, you know, it's like you don't want to forget anything. Yeah.
That might have been me.
didn't want to say anything like that. But, yeah, so you have to adapt, you know, and the client drive, within certain respects. I mean, obviously, data security is something I take very, very strongly.
Right.
All the emails we send out are encrypted.
Yeah.
All the software that I use is behind firewalls that I, using my internal auditing background, I inspect.
Right.
So there's different software companies I use, whether it's QuickBooks or Drake. I want to make sure that they're – you know, I get their reports as well, so we take it very, very seriously. If there are breaches, we're on top of it. Obviously, one thing you always worry about is when you file a return, and the IRS has been great about this. Within 30 seconds, you know if it's been accepted and processed. Mm-hmm. And if there's an issue, they come right back. So sometimes if your identity was compromised, I'll know immediately when we file a tax return. Yep. So then you can jump right on top of it as well. And the IRS has gotten a lot better in doing that and coordinating with CPAs or recovering the monies that have been stolen.
Yeah.
So were you, you know, you said it's practice is changing the industry. Were you nervous at all when, you know, TurboTax or what's the other one? H&R Block.
Yep.
Yeah. When those started coming in or –
It's interesting. It's actually a really good question. You know, a lot, and I've talked to a couple of been making more friends in the accounting practice. And again, in the past, did not. You know, but now we're kind of expanding Pagella CPA to be more, you know, out there in the industry. Everyone, to me, it's an abundance mentality. There's plenty of work out there for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But the H&R Blocks, you know, the tax cuts, the private tax software, they have their niche, and that's great. Most of the time, you know, a tax return, if you need a CPA, there are specific reasons you need a CPA, not just a tax preparer as well. While I have people that actually input the information, it does go through a CPA to be reviewed to make sure it's correct. You know, there's different needs along the spectrum of what, I mean, if you have a W-2 and a 1099 interest, be perfectly honest, you don't need a CPA to prepare your taxes. That's just, you know, just call it the way it is.
Right.
You can, tax cut is a great product, and it can be used very, very effectively. H&R Block, it's a great company.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you get what you pay for as well. If you're coming with a very, very basic return, go right ahead.
Right.
The hard part is what you get charged.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where a lot of the CPAs in the smaller firm size, you know, maybe, you know, 3 partners to 10 partners run into some competition with H&R Block because they'll charge $300 for $350 for a return. Okay, depending on my clients, you know, obviously sometimes it's less expensive because it's a relationship builder. But it's still a CPA versus a tax preparer.
Yeah.
Right.
So that return would be $500-$600 for a CPA. You can get a cheaper through H&R Block. But again, is it needed? That's up to the individual.
Yeah.
If you want the security of someone you know, preparing it that's not you, and you have someone you can point to if there's an error, great.
Yeah.
And if they make a mistake, you know, again, I have insurance as well. A lot of times if there are errors, you know, those things are fixable. A lot of times it's the client forgetting a document. But, you know, kind of you get what you pay for to a certain extent.
Right.
Yeah, I asked it because, you know, mortgages fall in the same realm where you have technology that somebody could go online and go to Rocket Mortgage and get a pre-approval. But I find as a millennial, and I work majority of my clients are millennials, they still want that person they could text or call and ask questions and have that face-to-face interaction.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly. So if someone has perfect credit, they're a W-2 employee, and they have money in the bank, well, you know what? Maybe Quicken Loans is really easy.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of time people have banged up credit.
Right.
Some self-employed individuals, you know, high debt-to-income ratios,
Right.
Not a lot of assets. Well, you're going to need somebody that's going to walk you through the entire thing and give you that hands-on approach. So,
yeah. I've been noticing that, too. It's interesting with on the millennial side, the clients that I've had,
yeah.
while they embrace technology, obviously, and even myself, I do the best to embrace technology, again, with my limited knowledge as I'm going through it, there's still a desire for human interaction,
yep.
still that connection with someone.
Oh, yeah.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Oh, I can reach out and text someone and talk to somebody.
Yeah.
Because things don't always go perfectly.
Totally.
You know, they don't always go the way you want them to go. And if things happen,
yeah.
I know someone that can fix it.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, real estate.
That's a big difference.
Things rarely go 100% as planned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
totally. There's so many variables going on. So.
Yep. So real quick, mm-hmm. I definitely want to catch more on your personal side.
Right.
But maybe in 30 seconds, mm-hmm. this would be an impossible challenge. But give us a quick recap. Now that you've lived through the tax changes and seen them in practice, right. like for people that have filed returns now under the new,
mm-hmm.
the changes have gone through, what were some of the biggest differences you've seen from years past? What should people know, to better utilize those changes this coming year, et cetera? And I'm only kidding about 30 seconds.
30 okay. seconds.
Give us your quick recap on what you found.
So from on the personal side, check your W-4. I mean, a lot of people got a little blindsided this year because their refunds were lower. However, they got more money every paycheck. So I had one client mm-hmm. that usually gets about a $9,000 refund. She got $600 when I prepared the taxes. So when I mailed those out, I was expecting the phone call, and I got it. And she said, where's my refund? I said, well, you got almost $8,900 all year extra and $600 at the end. So actually, you did better, but the optics were bad because mm-hmm. you got it every paycheck. And
right.
I'm wondering, well, why didn't you see it every paycheck? But
yeah.
a lot of people do online banking. They don't see a physical check anymore.
Right.
Or they don't see a pay stub. So definitely check your W-4. Up until 2025, it's going to be different. You know, obviously, you're going to get more money every paycheck. Do you want it every paycheck? Do you want it at year end?
Mm.
And assess your personal tax situation. Obviously, the SALT limitation did have an impact on some people.
Right.
Okay, great. And it is what it is. I mean, on the higher net worth individuals, ultimate minimum tax was almost a wash to a certain extent. So vast majority of the clients I had actually did a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't, I mean, obviously the ones that were the high earners, that but if you were going to make, you're making $800,000 a year, you're not getting all your itemized deductions anyway.
Right.
Charitable deductions, always great. If you want to, put your money to good use, make a charitable donation, that's not, that's still fully in force. The interesting thing, though, and I actually was anticipating a drop in tax business this year because the standard deduction is being so high. Completely wrong. We're up 20%.
Wow.
A lot of that came in the last 3 weeks. So it was, a bit of a interesting runaround because you're anticipating, okay, if standard deduction is higher, people are going to not need to file as much. It's not as complicated.
Yeah.
Completely wrong.
Right.
So I think people were worried about, and that's the thing, if you want a discussion about your taxes,
mm-hmm.
talk to your CPA in December, in November, over the summer. Reach out. We're not that – I'm always busy, but
right.
to have a conversation during tax season is a little difficult because at that point,
right.
there's not much more you can do to open up an IRA. And,
right.
of course, you're going to be driving your CPA nuts.
Right.
So that's the thing. I mean, take a look at your personal situation. Look at what happened this year as a gauge for the next couple of years. And
right.
if you're happy with the number,
right.
don't do anything.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess for people that use tax – refund as like forced savings mm-hmm. almost
right.
This was worse, but economically speaking, in theory, mm-hmm. you should be better off receiving the money during the year as opposed to
it's
waiting.
A much better way. Right. I mean, I would tell my one client actually brought the same point. It's like, this is my savings account. I'm like, well, listen, if you're getting an extra $600 a month, you're getting $600 a month, write a check
right.
and put it into an account.
Yeah.
Contact a financial advisor and say, look, here's $600 a month, I want to open up something.
Yeah.
And just do it on automatic. And forget about it. So then there's your refund. So now all year,
right.
you've just now made money on money that you were giving the government
yep.
tax-free. So there is a mindset shift.
Sure.
I mean, I was a big fan of the tax law change. I think there's a lot in there that we're still even scratching the surface on for the benefit of the individuals. But it's still, part of it as a challenge for a CPA is there's no precedent.
Mm-hmm.
When you file tax returns under tax law and the IRS accepts it, de facto it's a precedent. They're
right.
accepting these deductions. They're accepting this strategy. They may audit it. They may go back and say no in tax court, but generally they'll accept it. When there's no precedent, you kind of think, all right, how do we go about doing those things?
Right.
On the business side, what's called the Qualified Business Income Deduction, QBI, that's a huge thing. So not to get too technical for the people listening, but the corporation tax would drop, you know, from the 35 to the 21%. Individuals get a 20% deduction. For lack of a better term, if you made $100,000 in your business, $20,000 in expenses, you're at 80, take another 20% off that. Mm. So your taxes are now at 64.
Right.
Okay, great. That's a very powerful tool. And that should then lead the question, well, then what do I do with my depreciation deduction? Do I take it this year? Do I accelerate it? Am I going to do better next year and then not have the deductions I want for this year? So those conversations have to happen. And a lot of my clients in January were telling me we want to file an extension because we're not ready to have the discussion. I said, great, we'll file the extension.
Right.
We'll do it, you know, May, June, July timeframe and see what's your best option as well. So that's been a bit of a nuance. And a lot of the other firms were filing more extensions. I did this year, more extensions than I ever have. Partly for that reason, people who just weren't ready or they want to have additional discussions, which to me is fantastic. You take advantage of what's in my brain to help your own benefit out, not just putting it on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. All right, so I'll let you do the honors of your favorite question.
I actually have one more. Before we go into the mullet lifestyle, so a lot of economists are predicting a recession in 2020, possibly 2021. Mm-hmm. Some are saying New Jersey is going to hit 2021. Do you see people preparing, like, do they prep their taxes now based off what they're going to forecast in a year or 2 years from now, economy wise? Or
it's interesting because on the individual side, more people are worried about if you just work W-2, you're more concerned about being unemployed. So the idea is that, listen, if you think there's a recession coming, you know, buffer it up, make sure you have sufficient cash reserves, take an honest look at your profession and your job. Mm-hmm. Are you, you know, fireable at that point? You know, what's your personal situation? My own reading of the tea leaves, I mean, the economy has been strong. The businesses I'm working with are doing very well. Interest rates are very low from financing. I think people are a lot smarter than they were in the past related to real estate. So then overextending themselves. Yeah, I like to.
We like to think that.
You know, I mean, well, I do think a lot of the products, you know, real estate wise are coming out are good. I don't think we're dipping our toe in the problems that we had in the mid-2000s where it was just so egregious and so debt laden. I mean, I had clients that would say, can you write a letter for me and I can get a $400,000 house with a $30,000 income?
Like, well, listen, Mike's told me a few egregious programs that are popping up again. Yeah. So, I mean, it's crazy, right?
I mean, with the rates low, it's like, and even banks.
There's some stuff out there.
I think that there's a certain prudence into doing that. Having lived through it, it was a breathtaking time frame. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think, you know, recessions are a natural part of the business cycle.
Yeah,
so absolutely. It's a matter of how to get ready for it. But the businesses I'm dealing with are taking advantage. And, you know, my advice to them is, you know, when times are really good, start stowing away money.
Yeah.
You make it, great. Go on vacation during a recession. Yeah. You know, everything's going to be cheaper.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
you want to be counterintuitive, but spend your money during the recession and save it during when you're making it.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the key real estate-wise is you want all your money on the sidelines ready to pounce when the recession
when it dips.
Hits because there's going to be some deals to be had out there.
Well, absolutely. And it's a very difficult thing because following the crowd, you know, even what I hear with tax preparation.
Yeah.
I could almost videotape the conversation I have with clients over and over again because everyone I'd call up and say, oh, everyone's saying, like, okay, everyone's saying something doesn't mean it's true. Your individual situation is unique. Everyone's saying we're doing bad. Well, based on who? And then when you dig in, it's just hearsay.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, well, then talk to your professional.
Yeah,
you know, I'm just speak on mortgages. I'll call you up.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Because I can guess on something, but I'd rather go to someone that knows what they're talking about. Yeah. A legal question. I'm going to go to you because I want an answer. I don't want to, you know, just have a hypothesis on something. I want to say this is the actual answer to the question.
Right.
For sure. I figured out they're out there. We're talking about how, you know, real estate in New Jersey is so expensive and at a certain point it's gotta shake itself out, you know, down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But all right, the most important question of the day, because it's why we're here. So on top of accounting, right, what's your mullet look like? What's your lifestyle? What do you do for fun? I know you got a couple older kids.
See, he's a little rusty right now.
Yeah. I'm rusty.
The back of your mullet.
What's going on with the back of your mullet? How far does your mullet go?
Let's see.
That's a new one. Long tail.
Yeah.
So funny
enough.
Do you
curl the bottom?
some pictures from the 80s. And I said, no, I had long hair. My kids are like, Dad, you had a mullet. No, there's long hair. It's like, no, Dad. and it's kind of interesting. It used to be, you know, having a primary job and then the practice was what I did for fun to a certain extent. It was enjoyable and what have you. But now I'm doing it full time. I want to look for other opportunities to kind of enjoy or just expand myself out. Love wine. So that's always been something fun in cigars. So it's always more of a relaxing time, kind of just to kind of decompress and just relax. But most recently, a client slash friend of mine is kind of reintroducing me to a love that I had in the past, which is motorcycles.
Nice. Wow.
So, you know, I had one in the past, ended up selling it because the weekends were going to be with the kids and the family. A Suzuki GS500E.
Nice.
So it was fun. I used to go up on wine trails and drive it all over the place, brought it into the city. It was a little, you know, 550 cc's. It was great.
Yep.
When you go out west, we'd rent Harleys.
Okay.
So we'd have different, you know, larger bikes, which was a lot more fun. But I'm slowly, possibly this summer, going to get reintroduced. Still have my license, but to get back on the road a little bit,
right,
and just kind of get out there. And it's not a relaxing experience. It's a very focusing experience.
Yeah.
You have to focus on what you're doing right now,
right,
which is riding a motorcycle. Which I'm probably in sore need of, just to kind of have that kind of focus. But that's kind of the
nice
trend a little bit. And it's actually a friend slash client who's actually going to retain me to be the accountant for his firm. He's like, yeah, we got to go out and ride. I'm like, I can go out and rent a bike, right? He goes, yeah, we can rent bikes too. I'm like, this could work. And
right,
I'm like, which is good. Get back into it, try it a little bit, have a little fun with it. But that's kind of the future. I've been waiting a number of years to really kind of get back into it. But
right,
I'm thinking this summer might be the time to kind of go
and
do it.
Does your wife ride?
No.
Now, you know it's June 18th, right? Like, summer's here.
Yeah. It's summer.
Yeah. I want you on a bike soon.
it's funny. I was just looking at...
I'll hold you to it.
I was just looking at, in fact, I was at a soccer match yesterday at the beach. My daughter was doing a beach soccer match. One of the dads there's a rider.
Right.
And knows a lot more motorcycles than I do. And he mentioned, oh, you can rent it here. We rent it. My friends come up. We go there. I'm like, that's cool.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah. He's like, yeah, we'll get one out and go out. I'm like, yeah. Okay.
Right.
I could do that. Could be cool again. And my daughter's like, no.
Yeah.
Don't be cool. Just ride the motorcycle. Just don't be cool. I'm like, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I can chrome this out. She's like, please stop.
Put some of the colors on the bottom, right?
That'd be awesome.
The night lights.
That would be cool.
Yeah. But I mean, at least for rented as well.
You're right, though, about clearing your mind. Like, I had a motorcycle in law school, mm-hmm, and that's what I used to do. I'd just go out, go for a ride.
Yeah.
Oh,
we
really?
Just totally chill you out.
I had a friend years ago when we were actually just out of college, Dave, and he had what I called wanderlust. He would just travel the world constantly and he'd write, and he'd call me up on a Saturday morning. He would take a dart and throw it at the map of New York with his eyes closed. Wherever it landed is where we'd go. So it was like 7 o'clock in the morning. He's calling, okay, we're going to go to Kerhonkson. I'm like, the heck is that?
Right.
He said, we just got on bikes and go.
That's right. Sweet.
And, you know, in the road, 10, 12 hours, you get back, you're like, okay, I really got to get a new seat for that bike because that's a little uncomfortable, but it's great. And if you can get more, you know, probably look to rent some Harleys just to go out there and try it out. You know, go
right,
smaller.
Get your feet wet again.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Go out there, and I got to go buy a helmet now, so I'm
totally
looking forward to it.
Nice.
That's cool.
I get cool dad on the side.
So what date should we check in with you to make sure that mullet's starting to grow?
I would think probably by the beginning of August because we have a trip coming up, so I'll be away for 2 weeks. So
that's pretty sweet.
I'm guessing the fall is probably the best time to ride, right?
That's a nice ride, too, when the colors are going. Ming might know there's a town in Michigan, Hell, Michigan. So when I was in law school, my first bike was like I had a bad accident sort of in high school.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was when I was in college. I was a moron and I was like, I'm going to buy a motorcycle. And it was a friend selling one. So I hop on it, literally never been on a motorcycle before. Like I had a moped when I was a kid. I crashed it during the test drive.
Oh, geez.
Riding in shorts without a helmet. Like I was really lucky, like that I didn't smash my head on a curb. Like it flew right by the curb. So then I was gun-shy about motorcycles for a long time. So I get to law school. I decide, you know, finally I'm, like, a little more intelligent. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go take a course, like, to learn how to sleep.
Yeah.
Do that. So my first motorcycle was, like, a glorified moped.
Mm-hmm.
It was, like, an old 70s, like, Honda, like, 185,
yep,
I want to say,
mm-hmm,
right? So somehow I met all these Harley dudes in Michigan, and there's a ride to hell. So I'm on my glorified, like, moped, like a Honda 185, and totally brought up the rear riding with all these dudes on Harleys on the ride to hell. And the funniest thing about the ride to hell is you get to hell, and it's kind of like a touristy town.
Right.
And so you see all these, like, burly Harley guys, like, that are legit, like, riders and all geared out, massive bikes and everything.
Living the lifestyle.
And what do you do when you get to hell? You get an ice cream cone.
No, really?
So they ride to, like, this ice cream shop, have an ice cream cone, and then you ride back from hell.
That's awesome.
So I did the ride to hell. It was cool.
I think part of, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because I took a course as well, being a kind of an accountant. I'm like, I went to a motorcycle place to look at bikes. I'm like, wow, this is great. I had no idea what I'm looking at. I had no idea what I was talking about. Guy's like, do you know how to ride? I'm like, you know. He's like, maybe you take a course. So actually, the American Motorcycle Association offered one.
Yep.
And it was great.
Yeah.
The lady that taught it had this powder pink blue Heritage Softail Classic. It was gorgeous. And she was tough as nails.
Right.
And I had this little 250 she put me on. It was a little embarrassing.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. And,
that's what I rode on, too. Yeah, in the class.
But she taught everything. It's like you learn, and those skills that I had from that course still have to this day. And hopefully I can, you know, get the rust off a little
bit. Yeah, it was sweet.
That's doing it. That's the right way to do it, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and then people get hurt right. on bikes. Like, you don't want to mess around with that.
Yeah. So my landlady's boyfriend, he was a Harley dude. He worked at GM. He had this Harley. It looked like the tank was like snakeskin, basically.
Nice.
It was like really cool. So I used to go ride with him a lot. So it'd be funny, like, because my first bike was a small one, and he'd just blast out like on this crazy Harley, and eventually catch up with him at a light or something, you know.
Yeah.
But he always said too, he's like, you're going to go down sometime.
Yeah,
obviously. So like half of it is knowing like how to safely go down.
Well, exactly.
And
then.
And the biggest concern is you can know everything you want, but it's all the other morons on the road that.
That's one thing. There's a lot of bad drivers out there
right.
who don't look for other cars, let alone a motorcycle.
Fun, exactly right. Yeah. That's why driving out west, like when I would go to a Sedona or out in, you know, in Vegas, which is just gorgeous riding. I mean, we went out to one place. And we passed a town. The town was a trailer park and a gas station. I'm like, I got a whole tank of gas. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
Because it's just nothing out there. And that's a great ride.
Open road.
Totally. Here, it's, you know, taking between the poor quality of the roads, people just not paying attention. It's difficult.
Oh, yeah. Potholes are everywhere. It's insane. Yeah,
it's a very different experience when you hit one on a bike and your head, you know, snaps back.
Yeah.
Right. Or you go flying over the handlebars.
Yeah.
Or, right.
It's totally. Yeah, again, you have to be prepared. Yep. You know, something may happen.
Right.
You know, you just got to be smart about it.
So you guys are in line when you got to be focused at all times, looking in front of you.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's the best part about it, which is that nothing. You can't really think. I mean, you can, but, you know, again, you lose focus for a minute on a bike. It's very different than a car.
Yeah, totally.
At that point, you can't really rock out to the radio. I mean, to a certain extent, you can, but you really want to stay focused, and you're out there for a reason to ride.
Yeah.
I was behind a dude rolling through Spring Lake on a Harley the other day. I was behind him in my car, but he had his radio cranked, and I just caught the glimpse of, like, people on the sidewalk, like, shaking their head like, disapprovingly. Like, it was the it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
I did have one moment on a motorcycle. It was a Harley in Red Rock Canyon, and I was driving. It's a gorgeous day out, and Born to Be Wild comes on, and I am singing. I think a couple of coyotes tried to kill themselves.
Right.
Animals were running under my motorcycle to kill themselves. It was horrible. But I'm in, my wife's on back, and she's like, "Wow, wow!" I'm like, "Why don't you stop?" She goes, "Just go, just roll, just get it out of here, just do." And I'm, you know, that's belting awesome. Out a tune that I really would actually probably be offensive in at least 14 states,
maybe more.
Maybe.
All right, so you got kids. Yep. Obviously, how old are your kids?
19 and 14.
All right. What's your 19-year-old's name?
Chris.
Chris, we just want to say thank you for saving your father's life. We'll get that out of the way. Chris is studying accounting, I think,
right? Yes, accounting and psychology at TCNJ.
That's cool.
Nice.
So you think he might follow your...
he likes it.
Does he know he has a position open at Pungelo CPA?
Yeah, I think he's thinking about office space. And I'm like, well, first you got to get, you know, you got to earn your stripes. You got to get out there a little bit and, you know, learn what the profession's about.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, what's interesting too, and even his roommate and other roommate are considering accounting.
Mm.
It's a very different profession from when I went into it.
Right.
Just besides the technology of it, there's the forensic work, the fraud work, there's the auditing, it's the true accounting, the tax, international. It's a very, very different set of disciplines,
right.
And it's really wide open. And the hiring, I was actually shocked. My son was telling me he's a sophomore going into his junior year.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually coming into the sophomore level classes,
wow.
The larger firms, and because he's coming home with all his merchandise. I'm like, where'd you get this? He's like, oh, they came to the class. They're pitching, you know,
that's great.
One of the larger firms, the mega firms, because there's a need for this. So you can walk out of school making a very significant salary as an accountant,
right?
I mean, because when you do that, you're on the revenue side as well. They're billing you out to clients.
Totally.
So I said, from a profession perspective, not that college is vocational training to a certain extent, but you have that opportunity to be exposed to so many different things,
right?
I mean, I also have a certification. It's called CISA, Certified Information Systems Auditing, which is auditing of computer systems. That in and of itself is a complete discipline where it's fraud and cybersecurity and everything else. So it's really a wide open profession. The idea of accounting is a lot larger of a job spectrum than even when I considered it.
So is he interning this year?
He's got his part-time job. He's also doing some work with Pungelo CPA as well.
Good.
So he will be
keep him fresh.
Yeah, hopefully he should be working right about now, doing some QuickBooks input. I have to double check with him.
If he's listening to this, he's not working.
Seriously, back to work, man. And I do remember, like, undergrad, like, my friends that were accounting majors, they were the one group of kids that had significant jobs coming right out of undergrad.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously getting your CPA is a difficult process, and
even so getting a master's, I mean, obviously that's pretty much, I'd say, a pinnacle if you want to go for accounting.
So 5-year.
Yeah, that's generally, like, he may go for that too, which I fully embrace. You know, at that point, you have a little more knowledge. and then your worth out in the marketplace is just exponentially higher.
Right.
Sure.
Totally. All right. So we're running a little bit out of time, so we got to wrap up. But I do want to touch on quickly that you're also an advisory board member to Investors Bank,
yes.
State Theater of New Jersey in New Brunswick,
yep.
and you're a board member of A Need We Feed.
Yes.
So you obviously like to give back in addition to just collecting money from people.
Yes, and that's the organization. Absolutely. Right. And I was part of, when branching out on my own, finding, that's why I worked with Investors Bank. They have a very large foundation, and I'm a very big fan of the bank because of their donation.
Right.
And their social responsibility. So that's one of the reasons I got involved with them. Besides, it was just a great group of people to work with. So they had a position on their advisory board. They asked me to. I accepted gleefully. Right. And again, just honestly, from a networking perspective, it's great to grow business, to meet other accountants and lawyers and professionals. But what got me really connected with them was their work in their community. By meeting them, I also met the State Theater of New Jersey, and met some just fantastic people. I was shocked at the volume of philanthropic work they do across the community. They're a not-for-profit theater, gorgeous facility up in New Brunswick.
It is,
I tell everyone. Yeah. I mean, besides just seeing, I just go see shows. Right. Had no idea their outreach programs, whether it's LGBTQ or autism, the Black community, Latino community. Underprivileged kids, it's veterans, which is a passion of mine. It was staggering. And so I said, I just have to get involved. And I've been involved with them for a year, re-upping again now. We're building a business council at the State Theater for businesses to interact with the theater, not just, also to make the theater a little bit more B2B as well, but also open them up to a whole new world of businesses and also millennials as well.
That's cool.
So that's been a passion play as well. And again, also the aspect of enjoying the theater too. It's a nice night out.
Sure.
To go see some shows and have a good time with some really, really great people. And then in early 2018, my bookkeeper, Mary, a great gal, introduced me to a gentleman who she's friends with. We had coffee. And I really rarely walk out of a meeting feeling like, 2 inches tall. This guy, Cliff Baker, has been working with this group of people just to help people. Mm-hmm. They weren't a not-for-profit. They weren't anything. It was a group of people getting together, feeding a couple thousand people a year out of their own pocket.
Right.
And I sat there walking out of this meeting going, we got to work with these guys. I mean, this is great. What they needed was the formality. So my wife and I became board members of the organization. We got them, the typical accounting stuff. We got them books and records, a 501c3, incorporated, board of directors, really put the structure in.
Right.
But the passion that they bring to the table, it was just overwhelming what they do. And then basically, we basically feed people.
Yeah.
Right. It's restaurant-prepared meals on the major holidays. We're expanding now to cover a couple schools. On a weekly basis, so we've been growing, getting grants. I mean, it's been a beautiful experience, a lot of work, but it's just one of those things, it's pure giving. You get there in the morning, you're serving people, you're making deliveries, you're just doing it because it's the right thing to do, and it's a very humbling experience when you realize that your own hometown has people that are in need.
Yeah, that's wild.
Blinders come completely off, and you start realizing, listen, everyone qualifies as a human being.
Yeah.
If they have a meal, even we do actually on the holidays too. We bring toys
to
the kids as well. My parents actually belong to an Italian American group in Barnegat, and they started supporting us as well because we do also help veterans too as part of our program. And the outpouring from them, the Italian American Club in Barnegat at the Mirage, it's staggering. Because seniors can buy stuff, and now we're delivering not just food, but now it's personal care products or toys, Easter baskets. My wife was out buying 100 somewhat baskets, so we had a bunch of people putting Easter baskets together on Easter. So we're giving kids a meal, and also the Easter Bunny came free as well.
Cool.
So a very, very – it's the ultimate give back as well with zero – and then one thing about the group, no one gets a salary. Everyone's volunteer.
Right.
The restaurants volunteer. So, Cafe Italia in Tom's River, we use their services. It's just been great. So
that's awesome.
It's a wonderful experience, and we probably post the website up there as well for support.
Sure.
But just a great group of people, and I like to say, we're getting bigger, smarter, and better at what we do. That's the good news. The bad news is we're getting bigger, smarter, and better.
Yeah,
we have
more to take on.
Yeah.
Totally.
But definitely a labor of love, and that's part of what Pangelo CPA is about as well. It's not just helping businesses grow, but also wanting to have, an impact on our community.
I love
that's
that.
Awesome.
That's good.
All right, Vinny, we definitely appreciate you coming in.
Check
out A Need We Feed, obviously online. See how you can help, and I'm sure you can donate online probably.
Absolutely.
Or donate your time as well. Look for Pangelo CPA online, pangelocpa.com, on Facebook at Pangelo CPA. We appreciate you coming in.
Thank you so much.
My first podcast ever. This is the first one. So I'm very, very excited.
Last.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm a little disappointed we left the mullet at home after our event. So we will find you.
There will be mullet.
Yeah, we will get a picture of you with a mullet on. And we're going to have to talk to you about our tax write-offs related to the Mulletcast Live event.
Absolutely.
As we plan for our next Mulletcast event as well. Vinny, thanks for coming in. I'm Evan Balmer. Follow me on Instagram at Evan Balmer.
Mike Mercia. You can find me at Mortgage Guy_Mike. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.